Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello there, welcome to the Talking City podcast, coming to you as always from the Manchester Evening News. My name's Joe Bray, joined by Simon Bykovsky, and we've got a quite an entertaining 5-1 win over Wolves to discuss. And a player that you might not have heard of this season, Erling Haaland, scored just the 4 goals. Simon, I mean, I was sat next to you and my job was to write the second talking point from the game, if you like. And there wasn't really a second talking point, because the only talking point was Erling Haaland and his 4 goals and just how good he was.
Yeah, it feels like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? As bank holidays for you. Yes, Erling Haaland, eh? Good at putting the ball in net.
But nothing else. Nothing else is
good. But nothing else. I did think he's now got 36 goals for the season, which is monstrous. A quarter of those have come in 2 games against Wolves and Luton. So, some big numbers against some teams. But I think he scored against 14 out of the 19 Premier League teams this season and can still do Spurs. So for a guy that's had 2 months injured, it is still phenomenal. And yeah, he was, dare I say, his best performance of the season, or the sharpest he's looked all year. It was felt like we were transported back in time to last year at the Etihad, where teams would turn up, get rolled over by Haaland, and then sort of, you know, pretend that they would never have to play him again, and that would sort of give them some hope on the bus back to wherever they were going to. But yeah, it was really, really strong from Haaland, and a very convincing victory.
You say best performance of the season, better than Luton, better than one of the Derby performances, are the ones that spring to mind?
I think that is, yeah, it's up, it is, yeah, I think so. I think it's the sharpest he's looked. No. Yeah, I mean, there are those games where he was very good. But yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen him sort of so free. And I know sort of the space he got in behind the Wolves defence helped him to look good. But he just...
For the penalty as well. We've not seen him do that for a while.
Yeah, but also... Yeah, the header, you know, he'd not scored a header since the Derby at Old Trafford, where he'd missed a similar header in the first half that he could have scored, and the fourth goal was just phenomenal, and came at a time when City had just kind of shot themselves in the foot a bit by conceding, and you think, all right, what are they going to do now? And it was like within seconds, it was just like, no, Haaland's killed the game again. That is what he was doing last season. He was just single-handedly beating opponents, and it felt like a return to that, really.
No, absolutely. And you say 36 goals. Before last season, no one had scored more than that for City until before the war. And it's one of them. If we were talking like if this was his first season, it would be incredible. But because he did so well last season, it feels like he's sort of gone under the radar, which feels odd for someone who scored 36 goals and 25 in the league. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, we saw that Phil Foden won the Football Writers Award. Erling Haaland didn't get a single vote.
Which does make sense, you know, in the sense that if you I can think of three or four City players that you would vote for ahead of him. I think at least three players got votes ahead of him. But at the same time, it is factually ludicrous that someone who scored 36 goals and, you know, can be so devastating, has got zero votes at a time when, you know, John McGinn, Ross Barkley and Diogo Dalot have all been given votes. I don't know, were they watching at Selhurst last night thinking, yeah, Dalot's still player of the season for me?
Some City fans may agree. They might have Casemiro down.
Maybe someone with a sense of humour picked that out, yeah. But, he got 52 goals last season, did he, Haaland? And, you know, 36 with four games to go. If he can break 40, it would be, again, just out of this world, given he was injured for 2 months and then has had a lot of issues since, like with coming back from that injury. So that's why Wolves felt so different. And Forrest as well. He looked good at Forrest, but Forrest was the first time in a while where it felt like he was like running freely and had that kind of extra zip of pace that he's not always had this season. So it was, from a City point of view, like they must be rubbing their hands for the final few weeks of the season.
I think that's a good point, actually, because, he's had his injury problems, his foot injury, his setbacks, and he's also had the games where he's been marked out of the game, like the Madrid games, and I'm thinking the sort of bigger Arsenal, Liverpool, those sort of games where but for reasons that we know about, he doesn't always impact the game. But we've also not seen him have, like I say, those runs for the penalty and the sort of shift of pace and drop of the shoulder in the box at Forest. It does feel like he came back at Forest and was like, yeah, I'm ready now. I am ready to start. I'm ready to not just start, but win games for City. And there were a lot of decent performances against Wolves, but it didn't matter because Haaland had won the game. And then,
It kind of said it all with the Real Madrid game when he came off after 90 minutes, where you sort of thought, well, he must be injured because you wouldn't be taking him off with 30 minutes to go if he wasn't fully fit. But at the same time, there was that kind of little thing in that sort of thought, well, maybe is he injured? And that doubt,
there was an argument for it, wasn't there?
Yeah, that doubt that wouldn't have been there last season, that was just like, yeah, he's done okay tonight, but he's not, you know, he's not been the player that he could have been, and he still doesn't look to be at his best. And that was that May Madrid? No, April, middle of April. But that is still, you know, his injury kept him out till the start of February. But and you're still talking 2.5 months on where things aren't quite right. So it's been a long time since he got back to that position where, like you say, if he plays well, it doesn't matter what anyone else does because he's going to win the game.
I think his first goal, his penalty, was his 100th goal contribution of goals or assists. Very quickly went to 103, but it's a goal or assist every 73 minutes now for Haaland, which is just incredible over two seasons, considering he's not even played 100 games and he's had a hand in 100 goals. It feels like, it's like you said, it's the Haaland that we were talking about this time last season, but we've had a few months where he's completely been off the radar. Foden's been the one that's been winning the games, and yeah, Haaland's not really been there. And I feel like he's back now, and these last four games he's ready to show what maybe he couldn't do at the end of last season, which was impact those big games in the run-ins and the final, but he potentially also making up for lost time in those 2 months where he was off and wants to add a few goals to that tally. He then followed that up, his performance, with a bit of a cutting remark to Roy Keane, saying he doesn't care about what that man has to say. And Roy Keane responded by calling him a spoiled brat for his sort of disagreement with Guardiola as he came off. It turns out it was about referees and the fouls he wasn't getting, but
it was weird from Keane, did you not think?
It felt like he had nothing else to say, so resorted to that.
Yeah.
I scored four goals. I can't criticise him any other way, so I'll have a go at him for wanting to stay on and score more goals.
I thought the League Two comment was over the top and would come back to bite him because it would be reduced down to League Two. And, you know, when Haaland inevitably scores four goals in a game, you look daft. And scores like 50 goals in a season, 40 goals in a season, you look daft. But like, there is a point to be made about his overall contribution and his build-up play and his role in big games. But like, that sort of, to me, stuck like with what we know like as Keane the pundit, who is generally one of the better ones when it comes to City. And then, yeah, you know, quite glib and cutting from Haaland, say, you know, I don't care what that man has to say. And it just felt like it completely got under Keane's skin on the Sunday. Yeah. It was just like, no, like, you know, you can read why Haaland was substituted and you can read why he was annoyed why he was substituted, and nothing about being a spoiled brat, but just like the, you know, Keane knew what he was saying, but also the mood he was in, it just felt like he was like really rattled by Haaland. It's just like,
it wasn't about Haaland either. He brought it up out of nowhere.
No. Yeah. And then you've got like, you know, Alfie laughing his socks off all over Twitter. And it's like, yeah, like it's come a long way, hasn't it? This old thing. But Keane is now a laughing stock to Haaland and his dad, because he's been reduced to sort of just coming out with utter nonsense. And like, he's the nonsense is the
attitude, and you know, it's the striker's job to score goals and nothing else. And you know, he has a go at United players for their sort of not wanting to be there all the time. If he presumably hasn't read the reasons for Haaland being annoyed when he comes off, but
yeah,
he thinks that Haaland is not happy that he's not had a chance to score more than four goals. Surely that backs up what he's been saying for years on Sky.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it is a personal thing between the Haaland family and Keane, but it felt, I don't know.
But I would say up until now, you wouldn't have been able to point to that. You wouldn't have been able to say, yeah, oh, he said that because of anything personal between the family. But like, Sunday was just weird. Like, there was no reason to bring it up, and there was no reason to say what he said, and what he said didn't actually make sense. So it was just like, yeah, Haaland has clearly got under your skin.
I also thought that Keane's criticism is that Haaland doesn't do anything in the build-up. Sky were tweeting a touch map of Haaland of how effective he was against Wolves, which is mad considering they've spent 18 months saying, does he touch the ball? And Matt Tuesday, yeah, did a whole segment on his sort of coming deep and laying it off and doing the runs and before even getting into the goals. So it's noticeable. It's easy to say he doesn't contribute to the game. We know he does. He has improved a lot over the 2 years that he's been at City. But when Sky today are sort of focusing on that as well.
And also, I don't think you should ever, like, Pep is always going to defend his players, or usually going to defend his players in public. But like, he said it a few times over the years, and it's like, I know what it's supposed to look like, and none of you do. And this isn't like, it's not a you've not played the game, so you can't comment. It's a, I know the specific instructions that I've sent my players out to do, and I've not told you, because why would I? So when we are looking at a game and thinking, oh, why is such and such not doing that? Why is such and such doing that? Like, that generally Guardiola will know why, and he has been very happy with Haaland this year. So I think you've kind of got to take the word of the manager that's won three more Champions Leagues than you have.
I think there was it might be Nathan Ake who was asked about Haaland's play and his goals, and he first of all said he did so much for the team coming deep and and helping the midfield as well. So it's not going unnoticed by his teammates. And if those defenders have that ball to Haaland, they can play.
Yeah.
Go to bypass the midfield, then lay it off and run. It's a different weapon that they can have that maybe they've not always had since Haaland's been there. But I think it speaks for itself, doesn't it? The keen reaction, because he's probably realised, yeah, he's in the wrong and he's gone a bit extreme with the League Two stuff. And Haaland, by saying absolutely nothing, has completely taken the high ground and made Keane look a bit silly.
Yeah, yeah. Don't back down, double down from Roy Keane there. And he's kind of just felt a bit awkward. It was like,
I think you can tell by the reactions, like, what do you say? Like, it's...
Yeah, yeah. It's not what I expected from Roy Keane, having watched a lot of his punditry. And like I say, I think a lot of his punditry is good. It just felt like he just lost it there and deliberately had something that he wanted to say and was going to say it regardless of what had gone on to try and sort of point score. And it's like, if you're trying to point score against a guy who's scoring 4 goals a week in the Premier League, you're not going to win whatever you say. So maybe just kind of accept this one and move on from it.
And then we did see Julian Alvarez come off the bench and get a goal with Haaland's form. That's the sort of role he's going to be limited to for the end of the season, really, isn't it? It's very useful that he's scoring a fifth goal to sort of add to the goal difference, but we can't really see him playing any of the games looking forward, can we?
No, you can't. Although it was Fulham last year where he played together with Haaland and De Bruyne, and Guardiola was kind of like, look, this guy's so good that I've got to get him in my team with these two regardless. So it was a very good cameo. Yeah. You know, it was the difference from, you know, actually getting a note in the player ratings to just being like, came on with not enough time to go.
Has that scored a goal by any chance?
I think I was more effusive with my praise for him than that. It was good, and those are the things that you need to be doing if you are in that role, because that's the way that your role is gonna expand. Because if you come on the end of, you know, for 10 minutes at the end of each game and always score a goal, then you're gonna be saying, well, put me on for 20, put me on for 30, put me on for 90, and see what I can do. I think it was his 10th league goal of the season, so he's kind of, you know, he has slipped down behind Haaland again now that Haaland's back, but, like, you know, he's had a very good season still. I don't think that should get sort of forgotten if Haaland does go on to sort of take everyone by storm for the last 5 games.
It's tricky, we always say it, don't we? He's behind, he's second choice at number 10 and second choice at number 9 because of who is in front of him, but there is a very good player there, and maybe he went sort of, his level dropped a little bit a couple of months ago when probably the games caught up with him. But I always go back to the fact that he's not really had a rest in about 3 years of football, and probably isn't going to get a rest for another year or two, just because he plays so much for Argentina and City as well. We'll be back after a short break to discuss the starting lineup against Wolves, and does anyone else get into it when Pep Guardiola is choosing his strongest lineup for those final 4 games of the season? Hi there, welcome back to the Talking City podcast. Si, I turned to you about 60 odd minutes into the game and I was looking at the team that was out there, all arguably in there on merit, on form. And I asked the question, does anyone else get into this lineup for those final games of the season? Because there's an argument that each one of those should be in there. And we had a bit of discussion about it. There are some players on the bench like Stones, like Diaz, like Grealish, who last season were in that sort of strongest starting 11 and were sort of undroppable. But this season, it's been a bit different, hasn't it? And yeah, I think especially that defence, there is questions to be asked, because the 4 who started it against Wolves are all there on merit. They're all playing well. So why should they probably lose the place when Stones and Diaz come back? Because it's a bit of a dilemma for Guardiola.
Yeah, do you branch it out and talk about the back five? Dare we? I think I saw a comment on...
We were expecting Ortega to play, weren't we?
Yeah, I saw something that I think I don't think I marked Ederson particularly. I think I gave him a 6 on Saturday, which, you know, he had an important role in the fourth goal, but he also just like basically threw one into his own net as good as for Wolves to score. And someone replied and was like, oh, you know, you've made it clear that Ortega should be number one, you think. So that's why you're marking Ederson down. I was sort of like, well, no, it's just like he was rubbish against Forest. And then he's like gifted Wolves a goal. Like, I feel like I've been sort of champion Ederson more than most, and usually sort of give him more for his distribution than sort of a takeaway for anything he's not been great at the other end. But it does feel like, you know, I mean, you were in the press conference with Pep, weren't you, when he was talking about Ortega on Friday, and sort of, you know, is there a world where Pep says, right, will you let one in so you're not going to start against Fulham? I don't know.
Well, that's what I asked Pep, and he said, no, basically, Ederson is number one. And he said, well, when I said that, he said, well, Ortega could turn around and be rubbish next season and not be worthy of number one. So he sort of flipped it on its head. And it sounds like, as it always has been, Ederson will be number one. We were expecting Ederson to be injured. He recovered ahead of schedule, didn't he? So that's why the questioning was there, because it could have been that Ortega stepped in again. But
yeah.
Did recover in time and did play. But yeah, it was, if Ortega was listening to that, he won't have been filled with confidence that if he stays, because he is obviously going to decide his future at the end of the season, if he stays, he's going to get the minutes, because again, Guardiola said Ederson's number one. If Ortega plays well, he'll play, but it doesn't feel like Ederson was ever at risk of not playing if he was fit. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like you say, he wasn't very good at Forest even before his injury. If any other player played like that, they'd probably be dropped. But then, even with a fitness question mark over him, Ederson starts, another cross comes in, another goal goes against. I don't want to be the one who sort of is completely anti-Ederson, because he's obviously a very, very good goalkeeper. But yeah, it does feel like his form's dropped a little bit, and his fitness, he's picking up these injuries, and Ortega is very steady. I think it should be more of a 50-50 equation than it seems like it is. And I think Ederson will start every one of the Premier League games, and Ortega will come in for the cup final. And I think that's already decided, barring any injuries.
Yeah, I think so. But I think there are kind of genuine issues with Ederson's fitness and form. At the minute, but I completely agree. I think Ederson will stay until the cup final, and then it's difficult to make a case for dropping any of Guardiola, Ake, Akanji. It's easier to make a case for dropping Walker, but Walker is captain this season, and
he plays such a key role on that right hand side,
I think there will be rotation will come between Fulham and Tottenham. Mm-hmm. You know, there will be players that don't play in both games because others come in and to help keep things fresh. But you know, if you've got a week between the Wolves game and the Fulham game, does anyone come in from that team? Because, you know, City looked, it wasn't just Haaland that looked sharp, City looked really good. It's tough. Like, Stones, Diaz, Grealish, Doku, Alvarez, all kind of trying to get into the team, and Ortega as well. So six players trying to get in, really. I'm not sure how many are gonna do it.
It's a very tricky one, because you look at that back four and you think, yeah, they're playing well, keep them in the in the lineup, but then the alternative means that you're going into a final day decider, an FA Cup final, potentially with Ruben Dias and John Stones on the bench, which
I think
you wrote it was an impossible decision, and it kind of is, or an unthinkable decision.
Yeah.
I mean, we saw Stones come on and he got an unbelievable reception and he remains very popular.
Yeah, but
I don't know how he's going to go in.
But a bit, I mean, I think I wrote in the piece about Istanbul maybe being the high point for Stones and Dias and possibly Edison as well. You know, the reason we're talking about Edison is because he's not showing the form that he was then. And the same for Stones. Like, Stones will always be tremendously popular with the fan base. But this season, they've not really seen the Stones that we saw at the back end of last season. And even recently, like, he started the FA Cup semi against Chelsea, didn't he? And then was brought off at half-time after just having a really poor half. I mean, City weren't great generally, but he was poor and felt something again. And it's just been, it's been two stop starts. So do you think, is it worth bringing him back in because of the player that he can be, at the expense of an Ake or an Akanji that, you know, you don't have to have any question marks about their performance?
No, I agree and disagree, because it's such a different, it's such a difficult one, because as I've said, I would never have thought we'd be in a situation where you're looking at sort of four must-win games.
So yeah.
I wouldn't go in with those two. But I think Dias as well, he's not really been in the side. He's obviously had his illness, and I wonder if there's any sort of fitness issues going on. He's played a lot of football. But I think the Saturday's game was the 17th game out of 19 that Akanji has started, which is about five more than any other defender. And obviously there are injuries in there as well, but Akanji, as we discussed in a podcast recently, is moving into undroppable territory, whether it's right back or centre back. I think the one to drop out will be one of Ake and Gvardiol. I think he will bring back probably Dias.
Yeah,
for these big games. I know he praised Gvardiol, didn't he? And I don't know whether you'd go for experience of Ake rather over the sort of good form of Gvardiol, and basically tell Gvardiol that he's going to be in the squad for the next few years and just bide your time. I don't know, but on form, it's hard to say to Gvardiol, he's scoring goals, you're playing well, you're defending well.
Yeah. Later. Yeah, I think Stones and Dias and Grealish will play at least one game out of the remaining three league games, but I couldn't tell you which one. I think Doku and Alvarez might have to be content with super sub appearances. You know, Guardiola has spoken about Doku's extra sort of newfound ability as a super sub, and sort of mentioned him again on Saturday about how good he was when he came off the bench. And yeah, Ortega's probably have to go wait to the FA Cup final. So I think the team is pretty settled. It is just those difficult decisions, really, because like you say, it's just mad to think that if you'd said at this point last year, oh, we're going to leave Stones, Dias and Grealish out the team, people would have just sort of lost their heads a bit, whereas now it kind of makes sense.
I can see Grealish coming back in, and I can see Kovacic dropping out, move Bernardo back in the middle. That seems to have worked in recent games. You might not get as much control in the middle.
Yeah.
Kovacic was great against Wolves. He was giving the ball away a few times, and Wolves in the first half especially were just running through the midfield with ease. I assume Guardiola changed something, because that stopped around about the time that City scored the first goal. But then if you're playing Spurs and even United in a cup final where you don't want to give anything away, Kovacic could be quite useful in just offering another layer of support.
Yeah, but this is it. I couldn't tell you whether, you know, Kovacic would be more useful in the Spurs game, because they're more likely to be sort of need more punch in the middle and cover in the middle, but maybe Fulham is better and you trust Bernardo in the Spurs game. I mean, the good thing for Kovacic is that he's back in the conversation. Like, he has been better in the last few weeks and months, and sort of is back as an option in the starting 11, whereas he's had an up and down season, I suppose. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting. It's set up for an exciting end to the season, despite everyone saying it's now really boring and who cares, nobody's watching, and all the rest of it. So I think, yeah, there are a lot of players or multiple players who will feel hard done to by being left out of the team in the final weeks, and I don't think anyone envies Guardiola having to do that, and he certainly won't relish it. But it's the job, and it's sport at the deep end, and it's a position where City want to be in. So you know, they've just got to be bold and stick to what they think will work best.
I suppose we had it last season where there was no. I mean, he dropped Walker in the Champions League final. Foden was not in that starting lineup at all, and Mahrez as well. But he had to leave because he couldn't break in there. And these are really, really good players, but you can only put 11 in there. And throughout the season, you can rotate and you can keep players happy to an extent. But when it comes to the finals and the running and the games where everyone wants to, you can't please everyone. And I think Foden is an example where he's been through that last season, and he's done what he's needed to do in the early stage of the current season to make sure that he is a sort of a first name on the team sheet type of player now. But that means that players like Grealish no longer are, because they've not, for various reasons, reached the standard of last season. So yeah, like you say, Guardiola has a lot to think about, and we will come back to a little bit of that discussion of who plays against Fulham and Spurs, but we'll also look ahead to just another big week in the title race. And can City rely on an unreliable favour from United? Hi there, welcome back to the final part of the Talking City podcast. Before we look ahead to the title race, another title race to discuss, Simon, the WSL looked to be in City's hands. And then an 89th and a 94th minute goals for Arsenal at home for City turned that game on the heads. They just needed, if they'd won that game, they just needed 1 point in the final game. Now they need to win and better Chelsea's results in terms of goal difference. Because even after that, they had 7 goals ahead of Chelsea in the title race. And then Chelsea went and won 8-0. Not a great day for City, but it sort of reminds both men's and women's teams that everything can change in the space of 5 minutes. Guardiola keeps saying nothing's guaranteed, and if Liverpool can lose 2 or 3 games in a row, so can City. The way that Sunday worked out in the WSL, and then you're not going to see an 8-0 probably in the Premier League, but
it felt like back to the 2014 men's title race, that day when Gerrard slipped and then City won at Palace. It was like huge, hugely galling if you're a City fan. And yeah, they've gone from a position of sort of supreme confidence, where they've been on this amazing run, and they've been sort of battering in the goals to put them ahead on goal difference. And yeah, lost Bunny Shaw to injury, but that didn't matter. Oh, we'll score 4, we'll score 5. And we'll be 1-0 up against Arsenal at home with 2 minutes to go. And then it was kind of galling enough to concede an equaliser, but then to let in the winner. And then to watch Chelsea win 8-0. There will be a lot of sick people that night at City were just absolutely bereft at what happened. So it's big for them. I think they're at Aston Villa on the final day, and Chelsea have got Spurs and then United.
Yeah, at Old Trafford. So United could
right
two games at Old Trafford and give City two very useful results in two title races, or maybe not. Maybe,
yes,
maybe the women will have a better chance against Chelsea women rather than the men against Arsenal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's in, and Chelsea women aiming for the perfect farewell for Emma Hayes as well, or, you know, not perfect because it would have been a quadruple, but to send her off with a trophy at least. And yeah, it was looking very positive for the women's team, and now it is out of their hands. So there's not that much they can do. They just have to go and thrash Aston Villa and hope it's enough. Whereas for, you know, Guardiola and his side, it is still in their hands, even if they do have one more game to navigate than Arsenal do. But yeah, it's all comes down to the final week, which again is, you know, pretty remarkable. I asked Opta how many days each team have been top of the table, and I think City are ahead by one. But if there aren't any slip-ups by the final day, then it will have both been, they'll both have been top for the same number of days, which is a lower figure than the days Liverpool have been top. So it's been a hell of a season, really.
I just think that the similarities between the men's and the women's final week, you know, I think Chelsea are away at Tottenham, City are away at Tottenham, but
yeah,
United have these two games at Old Trafford that could help them
with under pressure managers.
Very true, yeah. Do you know there's a piece in this somewhere?
I'll get right on it.
In terms of City's week, Fulham away, not easy, but the easier of the two trips to London against Tottenham. I think we're going to be back on Monday to discuss what happens against Fulham and look ahead to Spurs. But do you go full strength for both teams? You've talked about the rotation. Do you sort of pick a team against Fulham with Tottenham in mind? How would you approach two decisive games?
I think they've got the squad that they can make a few changes between games and still have very, very strong teams to be able to get what they need. Yeah, yeah, exactly that. Well, like, I sort of laughed on Saturday because, you know, Pep made five subs and none of them was Rodri. And it's like, Rodri ever get a rest? But, you know, he's had a rest because he's had 7 days to prepare for a game rather than three. You know, I just think they're so late in this season that if you said to them, look, you've got to go and win at Fulham and then you've got to go and win at Spurs a few days later and then you've got to come back and beat West Ham, they'd go, yeah, we'll do that. Like the mentality of the players is absolutely phenomenal, and their eyes will be lighting up at the fact that, you know, there's really not many games to go, and if they can get these two trips out of the way, then there will be, yeah, they're pretty much there, because, you know, they've not lost at home all season, so they just need to get those wins. I think, you know, there's obviously the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium thing, which I'm sure we'll discuss more next week. But it's at the end of the day, City are a better team than Fulham. They're a better team than Tottenham, and they've got more to play for than either Fulham or Tottenham have. So
A, they've won in the cup, but also they just have to win. It's not a case of, you know, it's a February game or a October, November game where that's the main talking point. The main thing, the only thing that they have to focus on is winning, not what they've done in the past. So I think that will help them at Spurs. And yeah, it wasn't necessarily easy against Fulham in either game last season. It was a bit more straightforward at the Etihad this season. But I think, again, they do come into their own, don't they? And I
yeah,
every podcast without doing the research, what's the unbeaten run on now? Is it 20? 20
I think it's is it 20 in the league and 33, 34? in all comps. I mean, Gary O'Neill spoke after the game about sort of the difficulty of playing Manchester City in May. And he was kind of asked, because, you know, Wolves beat him in September, and he was asked about sort of the whether they are kind of a different beast. And he was kind of like, well, yeah, like they are good all around the year, but there is something about them. And I was sort of reminded of not when, I don't think Gary O'Neill was there, but a few years ago when City won 5-1 at Wolves and Kevin De Bruyne scored like a 30-minute perfect hat-trick in the first half. You're just like, yeah, you can't compete with that. And Haaland did similar on Saturday. It's just like when they enter this time of the season, they can be unstoppable when they really turn it on. I mean, last week, obviously, they rode their luck very much against Nottingham Forest, who would have got something out of the game if they'd had better finishing. But, like, yeah, when City are on it at this time of the year, there really isn't any stopping them.
I think you mentioned it before, the fact that they conceded that goal. Yes, they were 3-1 up, and then within a minute, it's a direct goal, but it's a good direct goal. And they've got that 3-goal lead back again. There was sort of a, you know, Guardiola went, he was very, very unhappy, to put it lightly, at the sort of the manner of that goal that Wolves scored. But seconds later, City go and score, and it felt like we just got to score. We're not going to mess around here. We're just going to do it. So you do feel like if they do concede at some point, say they'd conceded at Forest, they would have come back. And I mean, they didn't concede at Forest, but there was still a lot of jeopardy in that game. And on walks Haaland, and suddenly that game is under complete control because he scores. I think that mentality is, just because time's running out, they know that they can't score that perfect goal all the time. They've just got to do what is needed to score the goal and get back in front or kill the game off if needed. And yeah, I think City will know what they have to do. Maybe they'll look at, they might have looked at that United Arsenal game and thought they could call in a favour from their neighbours, but looking at United.
Well, I mean, yeah, surely it won't happen. Like Klopp said it, didn't he, after they drew at Old Trafford, and said, like, if Arsenal come here and play well, they will win, because United are not a good team. The eighth best team in the division, according to the table, after 35, 36 games. And yeah, just abject. Capable of turning a performance, but I don't think anyone who watched them last night would think, oh yeah, this team can beat the best team in, you know, the league leaders. I suppose the good thing about City going to Tottenham is that they will know whether Arsenal have slipped up against United or not. Because if Arsenal have slipped up, then City could win the league at Spurs, but they also have the knowledge that they have a bit of margin. Although it was interesting, Guardiola was saying after the Wolves game that kind of like it's helped them knowing that they have no margin, because when they watch Arsenal, they think this team will not drop any points, and they haven't been dropping points other than that defeat to Villa the other week. So so there has been no sense of complacency from City creeping in, because they're just like, we have to win. So they will go to Fulham thinking they will have to win, and then they will probably go to Spurs thinking we have to win, because United are in all likelihood not going to do anything. And then yeah, they will face West Ham on the final day, knowing that they have to win. And yeah, it's been like that for a while. And they've risen.
You go crazy if you were focusing on Arsenal and hoping it would slip up or not. And it's not just Guardiola saying it; it is a belief within the squad that they don't expect Arsenal to drop any points.
Yeah, and Haaland said in kind of multiple broadcast interviews after the game on Saturday that he talked up the mentality of the team, and part of that might be kind of just repetition, but it's clearly on his mind. And you've got a guy who has the mentality of being one of the best players in the world and like dedicates his body 24/7 to getting better and better and better, and he's saying all these guys have got an amazing mentality. So it's rife across the team and across the club, that they're all kind of pulling in the same direction with some force to get over the line.
Yeah, I think it's, as ever, it will be another interesting week, and as the women's title race shown, it can all change. However much we can say, this is going to happen and everyone's going to win the games, doesn't always happen, and City men will hope that they don't follow the same suit as the women did at the weekend. I mean, the women can still very easily win the title and Chelsea still have to get the points on the board, but it was a remarkable turn of events at the weekend. City will hope that it is a bit less dramatic as they have two trips to the capital, and we will be there for both, a couple of early mornings. Before we go, just a bit of a plug for the FA Youth Cup final, which is on Friday night at the Etihad. I don't know how many tickets have been sold, but I know that Leeds have sold 6,500, and if City fans can come out and support them and create a good atmosphere, it would make for a good afternoon. We've got some content coming out this week, a couple of chats with the squad and the head coach, and just a few profiles on what youngsters are there in the youth team this season, because it's been quite an interesting year for the academy. But yeah, it's the biggest game of youth football at the Etihad on Friday night, and then Saturday lunchtime will be in the capital for City Fulham. It's going to be, I mean, I'm having no sleep.
Short turnaround for you.
I know. Who arranged that 6:30 train on Saturday morning? I feel like I'm complaining about the 12:30 kickoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I would have, yeah. I believe it's squarely you, Joe.
Yeah, it probably is me. It's also my fault for signing up for both, but that is that's what you got to do sometimes.
Yes.
Guardiola says,
yeah.
It doesn't matter if you need a rest.
No, you can rest at the end of the season.
And I will. But yeah, until then, as ever, like and subscribe on the podcast platforms. Follow us on the social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. You know where to find us. And we'll be back on Monday after the Youth Cup final and after another weekend of title race action to discuss that and look forward to the Tottenham game.